go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30.
Welcome everybody to Between the Trenches, episode 13. Today we're going to recap some of week one's action. I know we're a bit late, we apologize for that, but we're going to give you two shows for the price of one here. We're going to do a little recap here, and then after that we're going to get into week two's action. And Mitch, it was a great week one, excited for week two, but what do you say we get into some of the stuff that happened a week ago?
Yeah, man, it was pretty exciting. There was a lot of ups and downs. We never know. Like like we said before, we don't know what's going to happen week one.
Absolutely.
That's
not
why it's the best part. So, yeah, let's get right into it with the first game of the week that we saw last Thursday night. Very well watched, very well anticipated. New England Patriots defeated the Pittsburgh Steelers 28-21. I know you and I kind of had the same thoughts. Like, Pittsburgh were – they made some mistakes. They missed those field goals. They were missing a few key guys. I think once they get those guys back, they'll be fine. They scored that late touchdown. I thought was hilarious, because if you weren't paying attention, the line on the game was 7.5, and they scored a touchdown to make it 7 with 2 seconds remaining.
Al Michaels made sure everybody knew what was going on. yeah, no, I have to agree, Mitch. I mean, that offense, D'Angelo Williams looked incredible.
Yeah, I mean,
I never expected that. I mean, when Le'Veon Bell eventually shows up again, they're going to have a two-headed monster there.
Oh, yeah,
in
for
Pittsburgh,
sure.
So.
And, you know, I think we got to mention how great Rob Gronkowski was in that game.
You know what? It's unbelievable. Part of it for me is I think some of Pittsburgh defense was a bit incompetent. I mean, there were parts where he was left wide open.
Yeah, one of those touchdowns.
That's something you can't do. Mind you, I don't think covering him, or I don't think there's anybody in that Pittsburgh secondary that can cover him regardless. So
no.
it really doesn't make much of a difference, but you're right. I mean,
we really just got to see what a healthy Rob Gronkowski gets to do.
Oh boy.
Start a season. Tom Brady was great as well. We kind of expected. I think that was kind of what I expected out of Tom. Like,
sure.
He was just going to methodically go down the field. He didn't get a lot of production out of his receivers, but he did out of his running backs and his tight ends. Scott Chandler, I think, is going to be another. It's going to be tough to cover Gronkowski and Scott Chandler when they're both out there.
Oh, yeah, especially in the red zone.
Oh, for sure. He's not quite the speed guy that Hernandez was when they had that double tight end threat, but in the red zone, especially, he's so big, man. If you've ever been to a game in Buffalo and seen him play, he's enormous when he walks around. He's 6'7". He looks like he's 7 feet tall.
Oh, boy.
All right, so let's go on to, I think, one of the biggest surprises of week one, Buffalo and Indianapolis. Buffalo won this game 27-14. They were up 17-0 at halftime. We kind of thought that both these teams would be good and that Buffalo would be good, but ultimately Andrew Luck would be able to get it done, and we were wrong. We were surprised.
You know what? This is the game I kind of want to focus on, because you're right, Mitch. This was an incredible performance by Buffalo. Their defense, it wasn't until probably late third quarter that Andrew Luck was actually finally able to get going. I expected this from Buffalo's defense, but so early, I mean.
And without Marcell Dareus, too. Dareus is suspended. They did this without him.
That's right.
Yeah, I think if you watched Andrew Luck after that game, he was stunned. Like, I don't think the Colts really were ready for that Buffalo defense. They were overwhelmed. They did not, they were not expecting them to be that good. And they just weren't, they didn't have a game plan for it.
Well, I mean, you look at it. I mean, this Indianapolis offense was supposed to be one of the best in football. Frank Gore, I think he ended up leaving hurt at the end. Andre Johnson was pretty much a non-factor that whole game. He missed that two-point conversion late. Tyrod Taylor looked incredible.
Yeah, accurate.
He did everything they probably asked of him. Only 19 passes, completed 14 of them for just under 200 yards, and that beautiful 51-yard bomb to Percy
Harvin. Yeah, I did not know he had an arm like that.
Like you said, just accurate. I mean, if he can maintain that kind of poise in the pocket, they're going to be a tough out for New England next week.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to say that.
And we should mention, too, T.Y. Hilton's going to be lost for a little bit for the Colts, which could be a bit of a loss. But I think Luck is going to may do better without that number one guy, where he's the number one guy now for the next couple weeks. I expect them to bounce back, both teams to be better this season, get better as the season goes along. But
Absolutely. Really,
Buffalo, I think they really kicked the door wide open and said, hey, we're here. We're not going anywhere. We're going to be a tough out all year.
I mean, sorry, just before we move on, but like we mentioned it, two picks of Andrew Luck and a possible third.
Yeah, in the first two possessions of the game, Luck threw a pick on the first one, and a sec. He threw a pick on the second one that got called back from a penalty. But yeah, you know, crazy from the Rex Ryan defense. Rex Ryan with a big smile on his face the whole game. He barely spoke; like he was just laughing through his press conference afterwards. So I that Rex Ryan makes a big difference there. I'm excited to watch, especially this coming week with the Bills and the Patriots. That's going to be a huge one to watch.
Can't wait.
All right, now we go to an NFC North rivalry. The Green Bay Packers kicked off their season without Jordy Nelson against the Chicago Bears with a win. They got 31-23. I watched this one. I don't know about you, but this was a closer game for a lot. This was a close game for most of it. The Packers kind of pulled away at the end. Chicago got a late touchdown. James Jones, though. You know, James Jones gets cut by the Giants.
Right.
And now he's starting for the Green Bay Packers, scores two touchdowns.
It's as if he never left, right? I mean, like you said, he was cut by the Giants. You know, in training camp after the preseason games, was with the Raiders all of last season, and then just comes back to this Green Bay offense, like you said, just over 50 yards, two touchdowns, incredible. I mean, if they can get him going again to take some ease off of those young receivers and ease them in slowly into the season, I mean, look out for Green Bay.
Yeah, and I also liked what I saw from Ty Montgomery. Not a whole lot in the receiving game, but in returning, he looked awesome.
Yeah.
He was bringing the ball out to the 30, 35-yard line every time.
I want to give some credit to Chicago, though. Their defense, you know, like you said, they kept it close for a good portion of the game. And I didn't expect their defense to play as well as it did. Now, I know the box score says that Green Bay scored 31 points. But like you said, it was more of them pulling away late. I mean, for most of the game, they were somewhat competitive. I got to give them a lot of credit.
Yeah, and on offense, too, they scored 23 points against not a pushover of a Packers defense. Forte got the ball a lot. He looked real good.
And that's what they got to keep doing.
Yeah, Alshon Jeffery, like, clearly wasn't 100%. He looked injured all the time.
Right.
So once they get him back healthy, hopefully he'll be able to get healthy while still playing.
Right.
That'll be a big help because they lost Kevin White in the preseason. That was kind of a blow. They lost Brandon Marshall in the offseason.
And a lot of their receivers are hurt, actually, right?
Yeah,
now.
Right now. So Martellus Bennett looks good, too.
Yeah.
But I thought Cutler, you know, he made one or two, like, Cutler-esque plays. But for the most part, he started the game real strong. He made a couple of nice little runs there, made some jukes.
Just before we move on, I just wanted to mention, obviously, we've got to give some credit to Clay Matthews undercutting that pass from Cutler, like you said,
some
of those bad plays he makes. But, and everyone's always says it, but I got to give some credit to Aaron Rodgers again. I mean, some of the throws he made, especially in the end zone, that one he had to Randall Cobb, I don't remember if that was a second or third touchdown, but just over the corner's shoulder. I mean, the guy was 18 for 23. He had 5 incompletions all game. He only threw for 189 yards, but, I mean, there might not be anybody as accurate, as poised as him right now. It's just incredible to watch.
He's going
to
be he's always – every down, he's a tough guy to defend.
Yeah.
So – now we go on to a game that we both said this one would be a low score, Kansas City Houston.
That's right.
And we were wrong. These were like the first. Kansas City jumped out. They scored two touchdowns really quick.
Oh, yeah.
They won this game 27-20. We said, you know, low score. And you know, Brian Hoyer gets a very short career as a starting quarterback for the Houston Texans. He gets pulled in the second half. Mallett came in and scored a touchdown with DeAndre Hopkins, and now it looks like Ryan Mallett's going to be starting this week. So I guess that the preseason quarterback competition didn't mean too much.
No, not at all. What did you see? I mean, what did you think of Brian Hoyer? Do you think he deserved to be pulled?
Well, I think the one thing that was really getting at the Texans and probably Bill O'Brien was he wasn't getting the ball down the field, and he wasn't getting it to DeAndre Hopkins mostly.
And that's a mistake.
And that's something that Ryan Mallett can do very well. He's got a very strong arm. He can rifle it down there. I think that was just kind of what the difference was mainly. Hoyer likes to check it down. He likes to kind of make the safe throws, but he was still incompleting a lot of balls, so – I think it was a more performance thing. I was a little surprised, honestly, that O'Brien came out and gave Mallett the starting role already, just because I thought it was just kind of one game against a pretty good Kansas City defense.
I mean, it's funny because he said that Hoyer would have a short leash. I mean, I don't think anybody, like you said, would have expected him to have that short of a leash where you're not even going to get to play a full game. So it's kind of surprising. Something else that's kind of surprising is the fact that this Houston Texans defense that we were praising all offseason gave up 27 points.
Yeah, I think the Chiefs really exposed the back end of that team. Like, yeah. Alex Smith got the ball out of his hands very quick. He's very good at that. A lot of little dump passes and swing routes to Jamal Charles.
Right.
They unleashed Travis Kelce.
Yeah, he
down
was.
The field. There was one of his touchdowns. It's like
wide
the Texans
open.
Forgot to cover him.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got to be, if not the one, then the number two target that they have to make sure to be covering every play. I thought Alex Smith was very good in managing that game.
For
and,
sure.
And getting the ball out of his hands quick and not taking those big hits from J.J. Watt and Javion Clowney, because those guys were all over that offensive line, and he was very close to being taken down quite a few times.
Exactly, yeah. Watt ended up finishing with two sacks in the game, so, yeah, three quarterback hits as well. So you're right, yeah. Alex Smith did a good job of, you know, not turning the ball over in with that pressure coming at him.
Yeah, and I can bet you that a couple of those sacks that he did take, he probably didn't have anywhere to go with the ball, and he felt like that was a safer way to go.
Exactly.
The other thing you should mention, if you guys have time, go out and find Bill O'Brien's post-game newser, because it was awesome. The first question he gets is, who's starting next week? And he just blows up, I don't know, I just got here. And it's a great reaction. And like, he had to know that was the question was coming, but still, like, he's seen Hard Knocks. He's a very emotional, fun guy.
Right.
And he's a quarterback guy. So,
of course, yeah.
So that's, you know, that's definitely going through his mind, and he doesn't know. He's probably frustrated just as much as anybody right now.
Exactly.
Now we go on to my upset of the week, which was dead wrong.
Hey, man, Carolina. I picked them too. Yeah, it wasn't my upset, but I did pick them.
Carolina defeated Jacksonville 20-9. I think, you know, Panthers made some timely plays defensively and offensively. I still don't really like what they did as an offense. I think Cam ran the ball 16 times against a Jaguars defense that isn't, you know, particularly pressure-oriented. They didn't have their best defensive lineman, Cedric Marks. And I think that's just too many. That's just too much for Cam to be running the ball. That's going to be a tough season for him.
You know what? I think we did. I believe we did predict that the Carolina defense would score a touchdown, though. So when you can think about that, I think it was it a fumble return or an interception from Blake Bortles? Just want to double check here.
Yeah, I think it was. No, they definitely got one. And they we got to mention too.
Josh Norman
too. The guy, yeah, from Coastal Carolina, one of the unknown kind of corners out there.
Right.
He did a good job. Allen Robinson only got one of his six targets.
Exactly.
He looked a little banged up, but he said after the game, coaches said after the game, he's fine. Luke Kuechly got a concussion that game. That's a big loss.
That's something we're going to have to monitor, I guess.
And we, right, you know, as of right now, it's Friday morning before week two of the NFL Sunday games, and we don't know as of right now if Kuechly's going to play or not, how long he's going to be out. This is big. These guys are losing, are dropping it. And like I mentioned with Cam Newton, you know, they can't afford, like, him taking hits. They can't afford to be having all these injuries, so they need to
– No. No,
I don't know. They need to figure something out there.
Yeah, and Jacksonville, I mean, they're just going to have to expect more from Bortles. I mean, I was expecting more from him going into this year. It's week one. You know, he went
22 and 40. And that Panthers defense is really good.
Exactly. Right? So, I mean, you know, he's just going to have to do better. He's going to have to average more than 4.6 yards per attempt. I mean,
yeah,
stuff
and he's
like got
he's got to cut down on the turnovers. That's a huge.
It's huge. Yep.
For him.
Oh yeah.
So. Next game we want to go to. I'm excited to get this one because I was like almost dead right on this. The New York Jets defeated the Cleveland Browns 31-10. My guess was 27-10, so I was 4 points off. You picked the Browns to win this game.
You know what, Mitch? I did not expect to see a Johnny Manziel sighting. If that helps my cause.
No, I mean I don't know if any of us did. That was a bonehead play by McCown to go down there and try the helicopter.
Yeah. I guess he must think that he's John Elway all of a sudden.
Yeah, dropped the ball, got a concussion. You know, Johnny Manziel comes in. We saw a flash of his talent there where he had the touchdown to Travis Benjamin.
Yep.
But then he went off. He went off back to being Johnny Manziel. I've been pretty adamant about this. I don't think he's ready at all. He's, you know, he looked like he couldn't see at points. Like there were times he had a clean, good pocket and he rolled out because he just. Because that's what he does. He made some, you know, kind of college plays again.
You know what? I just want to give him the benefit of the doubt, though, just because you got a second-string quarterback, especially him, coming off of the elbow injury. So I don't think he even had a chance to play.
No, and this offense wasn't designed for him. Like, they didn't game plan Johnny Manziel.
Exactly. So, you know what? I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. We don't know whether or not he's going to start this upcoming week, because I think they're going to give McCown a chance to start or practice today, Friday, like you mentioned.
Yeah, it's tricky. He's got a concussion, so it's real tricky. It'll be game time. I kind of expect to see Manziel. I don't know. McCown took a pretty nasty hit.
Right.
And they're playing the Titans. I think they may look at that as a winnable game. We'll see.
Right.
But I kind of expect to see Manziel in there.
Okay, fair enough.
But we should mention, too, that the Jets, they put up 31 points on a very good Browns defense.
Yeah.
Ivory, they really lean on that Ivory running game. He had a big game, 90 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Right.
They didn't ask too much of Fitzpatrick.
Which sure, I think was, that's fair.
Was right. And they were able to kind of, when they got down to the red zone, the Browns have kind of smaller corners. And the Jets with Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker, they're just throwing jump balls in the end zone, both caught a touchdown. And that worked. That looked like a good, you know, Todd Bowles team win to me.
Oh, yeah. And you mentioned the Cleveland Browns defense. They were one of the worst defenses in terms of stopping the run last year. And I thought that was something that was going to be able to improve, especially drafting Danny Shelton. But you look at it here. The Jets, and you mentioned Chris Ivory, they ran for over 150 yards on them. So that's clearly something they still have to address as the season goes on.
Absolutely. So we go on to what was, I think, my biggest surprise this week.
Okay.
The St. Louis Rams beat the Seattle Seahawks 34-31 in overtime. A lot of weird stuff happened this game. No Cam Chancellor for the Seahawks, I think, was huge. Enormous.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Nick Foles shouldn't be able – wouldn't. I'm not convinced that Nick Foles would have passed for 300 yards with the Rams offense last year with that rant, like, with Cam Chancellor and Byron Maxwell still there. That really.
We'll get to Byron Maxwell later.
But you know, even like Kerry Williams, who was another guy who you're not particularly fond of, he made a couple plays, but he did not look like a guy who was going to be able to take 20 targets a game. The O line never got in rhythm. Rams D line went nuts.
Six sacks on Russell Wilson, and it could have been more.
And a couple of tackles in the backfield on Lynch.
Oh, jeez.
Tyler Lockett looks like a lot of fun for the Seahawks. So he had a kick return touchdown. Tavon Austin had a kick return touchdown. This was a really weird game. There was that kind of odd onside kick that wasn't really an onside kick in overtime.
Oh, Carroll
came out afterwards and said, that was supposed to be a bloop kick where it kind of goes over the line and goes about the 35-yard line until we didn't have to kick it to Tavon Austin. But it didn't. It was a terrible execution. They basically just kicked it over.
That's on the coach because he clearly kicked an onside kick. So clearly the message wasn't relayed properly to him. If that's what
it was, or if it was just the worst kick, like he just totally missed it.
Probably.
But that was just didn't look like a Seattle Seahawks team. I thought the one thing though, T.J. Graham for the Rams did a really good job on Jimmy Graham or T.J. McDonald. Sorry, a really good job on Jimmy Graham. This was a really odd game. I think we saw more than from the Rams than we expected and less from the Seahawks.
You know what, though? The score wasn't what I predicted, but I did expect a close game. I thought that, I think it was 13-10 I thought the game was going to be. So, obviously, it was within a three-point game.
Mm.
Obviously, I still had the Seahawks winning and not in the 30s. I mean, this was crazy. You mentioned the punt return, the kick returns that were returned back, Tyler Lockett and Tavon Austin, respectively. You take those away, it's still a higher scoring game than you would have expected. So, yeah, I want to see what both of these teams do in their upcoming weeks because these are two of the best defenses I thought going into the season. Cam Chancellor, clearly, you mentioned it, makes a huge difference when he's not out there because I think it was inside the NFL I was listening to it. And Michael Irvin made the point that, if he was still playing, he would be afraid to go over the middle if Cam Chancellor is there.
Yeah.
But now that he knows that he's not there if he were playing, he has no fear. I mean, it's a courage thing. I mean, he says he's one of the more courageous receivers we've seen. He had no problem going over the middle. For him to say something like that about Cam Chancellor, that speaks volumes.
Yeah, and Cam Chancellor is also the guy in the Seahawks locker room who people go to with their problems. He's kind of like the liaison between the coaches and the players.
Sure.
It's not having him around is a big – Yeah, it's a big plus. We saw Marshawn Lynch come out in practice a while ago, wear the 31 jersey in support of Chancellor. This is not something that's just between Chancellor and the ownership or team management. This is affecting, I think, a lot of layers. And, you know, they're going to play the Green Bay Packers this week. I think if they lose that game, he's back.
I was just going to ask you, like, before we moved on. So you think that would be the extent of it?
Yeah, we'll get into it on our next show, but I have a feeling that Aaron Rodgers is really going
to
take advantage of no Cam Chancellor.
Oh yeah,
and Kerry Williams out there. They haven't beaten the Packers. Haven't beaten the Seahawks since Russell Wilson's been there. I think that changes now, and that'll be a wake up because the Seahawks, you know, they have plans to go back to the Super Bowl, and they can't do that if they're starting games, certain seasons 0-2.
0-2, yeah.
Now we go on to. One of the teams we spoke a lot about in the preseason, the Washington Redskins and the Miami Dolphins. Miami narrowly beat at Washington 17-10.
Yeah.
This was my lock pick of the week, I was a little worried. It was 10-0 for a long time.
Just
there.
Wait until I get to mine. Don't worry.
All right. And the Skins kept this. Like we said the Skins kept this close for a long time. They scored the first. Not only did they score the first points of the game, they scored the first points of the first NFL Sunday this year.
Yeah.
They're the first ones on the board. Miami had a lot of hype coming in. I didn't really buy it, and I'm still not really buying it. After this kind of ugly win, this should have been a lot easier for the Dolphins.
Yeah. No, I agree. But you know what? A stat that we were trying to. Remember, this was Miami's first win since 1984 in Washington.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that would have played a factor in our pick if we had known that going in. But, I mean, yeah, you would have just assumed that Miami would have had no problem. Like, we didn't expect Ryan Tannehill have to do a lot to be able to beat this Washington Redskins team. But and something I did mention in our preview was that I thought that they were going to be able to maintain the run and hold Lamar Miller in that Miami running game at bay, and I would say for the most part they did.
Well, for a big part of it, I thought it was kind of weird that Damian Williams, Lamar Miller's backup, was getting a lot of like third down carries, fourth down. He got a fourth and one carry that just seemed like, why wouldn't you have your number one back in there? And that kind of brings some questions around to the whole consistency of the team and Joe Philbin running that team. I you know, I'm not a big fan of him. I know you're not a big fan either. Right. And I think that was, you know, that was my biggest worry about the Dolphins. They have a good roster, but they don't have the best coaching.
You know what, though? I do want to give some credit, though, to Kirk Cousins. I thought that, you know, he obviously had the early interception, and I know he finished the game with two. But I thought after that first interception, he started to, you know, the game started to slow down for him. He did look a bit better. Obviously, losing to Deshaun Jackson to a hamstring injury early, that doesn't help.
No, because,
I mean, he's a guy who can take the top off of any defense. Pierre Garçon looked pretty well. Looked pretty good. I want to give him some credit. And Alfred Morris, he looked incredible. So I would assume that the Washington Redskins are going to be relying on their running game going forward, especially for the length of Deshaun Jackson's injury.
So. Absolutely. They got a tough matchup against the Rams this week. And they're going to – really, every week they have a tough matchup.
Exactly.
Now we go to my team now. The New Orleans Saints took on the Arizona Cardinals. Cardinals won 31-19. I wasn't particularly surprised by this. I think the no-fly zone was in full attack. They didn't really allow Breeze to get much. They were really physical with Brandon Cooks. He had one big catch on Patrick Peterson. But really, they shut that down, and the Saints couldn't really match up with the Cardinals' wide receivers without Keenan Lewis in their lineup. Brandon Browner was exposed a few times on the deep routes. But
you know what? New Orleans kept it close for a good portion of the game, didn't you say?
Yeah, you know, they did. I think it was just that they threw a lot of passes to running backs, and they just couldn't get those big chunk yardage plays that they're used to getting with Drew Brees.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was an interesting game. Mark Ingram, he didn't rush in the ball.
No, he didn't rush
the
ball. No, not particularly. I wasn't really, you know, that front seven for the Cardinals, really. That whole defense did a really good job. You know, allowed 19 points. 19 points on a Drew Brees offense is pretty much like what you're going to ask for. Even when he has a bad day, he still puts up something close to that.
We should also mention Andre Ellington ended up leaving this game.
Yeah.
He's somebody who he's kind of injury prone, and to already leave in week one, that kind of puts the onus now on Chris Johnson or even David Johnson, the rookie.
Yeah, they had David Johnson returning kicks there that game too. I think he looks. I think they'll be okay going forward. They kind of have the pass game. Carson Palmer actually healthy and having his trio of receivers there that he's got a good relationship with. I think they're going to be okay.
Okay. All right. Move on to the next one there, bro.
All right. So we got San Diego and Detroit. And this was a real good game. One of the best.
Yeah.
Detroit jumped out to an early lead. They're up, I think, 21-7.
Yeah, it was.
And,
I was shocked.
Chargers came storm back. They just kind of got going a little later on. They won the game 33-28. Phillip Rivers looked unreal, threw for about 400 yards. As per usual, he didn't show any quit.
No.
I thought Keenan Allen did a really good job. He had about 15 catches, I think.
Oh, yeah, for over 160 yards.
Yeah, with no gates, no problem for Keenan Allen.
Right.
Amir Abdullah looked really good for the Lions.
He did. Oh, yeah, he did. Average over 7 yards a carry, man. That's impressive.
He took a touchdown, in his first touch, I think.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah, this was an interesting game, man, because, like you said, Detroit got off to such a quick and early lead that I was starting to worry myself. This is my Super Bowl pick.
Yeah.
Or at least my team to get to the Super Bowl. But like you said, Phillip Rivers, they charged back in that second half. I think he had like two or three incompletions all of the second half. So he was maintaining the game as usual. This was one of the things where they decided they were going to maintain possession of the game. They had over 38 minutes of possession on offense, San Diego. So that's just a recipe for disaster for Detroit.
And that's how they were beating the good teams last year when they beat the Seahawks. They had something close to that last year.
Oh, yeah.
So I think they're just kind of picking up that was long drives, good defense. I think the Lions are not going to be an easy out this year. Like, they gave up that lead, but I think they showed that they're, they've got Abdullah's going to be good for them. Ebron had a good game.
Yes.
They still got Tate and Megatron on the outside. So they're not going to be, they're not going to go away easy for anybody.
I agree.
Now, this was another one that we, we differed on this one. And again, I was right. Denver Broncos beat the Baltimore Ravens 19-13 in very boring game.
You know what? And I can see why people didn't enjoy it just in terms of the lack of offense. I'm a guy who I love defense, but I hear what you're saying. I know what you're going to say that, it was almost sometimes lack of production from the offense. Like, they were just missing plays instead of the defense making plays to frustrate the offense.
I think both teams had really good defenses too.
That's the thing. Like, they were really, really well coached that day. Wade Phillips and that Denver defense looks incredible.
Yeah.
Their
corners are great. Ware and Miller up front, they look good. We haven't even really got to see Shane Ray that much,
right?
But yeah, I think that trio of corners too. I like that. Key Tlaib,
Chris Harris,
and now the second year guy, Bradley Roby.
Oh yeah,
from Ohio State. That's a good group. But I still don't see. I know you're a little higher in the Ravens than I am. I still don't see how the Ravens are going to move the ball this year.
See, my only thing is that we just spoke about the Denver defense. They're playing such a stout defense that I think that it's kind of hard to see where they, move the ball against them.
Only two guys had more than two catches for them, this Forsett and their fullback. Steve Smith only had 13 yards. Aqib Talib really took it to him.
Right.
And Flacco threw two picks just trying to make something happen.
Right.
They, if they can get Breshad Perriman in there, that'd be a big help because they really don't have that deep threat that Flacco's used to having.
Right.
So, it was, like I said, kind of a boring game. It was a conservative game. We got to look at Denver's new kind of run-first offense. And I think they're going to play a lot of games kind of similar to that this year.
You think so?
Yeah, I think they're going to go. We saw, what we can say now is Friday morning. We know last night was the Thursday night game. Denver had a big game passing the ball late against Kansas City Chiefs, but yeah, that's the way Kubiak likes to do things. And I think early in the season or before Kubiak came in there, John Elway must have had a conversation with Peyton Manning where he said, "Look, I did this where at the end of my career we went to a run game. We had Terrell Davis. I won two Super Bowls like this.
Right.
I think this is a good idea. I'm going to bring in my guy Gary Kubiak, who was always backup for a lot of time in his career in Denver. So good friends, and I'm going to bring this guy in, and we're going to run in this offense." So I think Peyton, they're going to kind of that combination of Peyton's up-tempo and Gary Kubiak's run first. It'll be kind of, we'll see how long this can go. Will there be a point where Peyton just says, look, what I've been doing has worked for 18 years. We need to do this.
See, that's it, and that's exactly it for me, because, I mean, for me, we bring up the Kansas City-Denver game from last night. Denver seemed to adjust quickly. Like, when they noticed that Peyton just wasn't able to, you know, he was facing so much pressure early on, and it was because that, you know, they were keying on the run, you know, trying to force bad plays out of Peyton, where it looked to me as if they adjusted quickly. It looked to me as if they adjusted quickly and they went to the no huddle offense. Like, it was near that second half when they scored those two touchdowns late to even the score going into the second half, where it seemed as if they were like, okay, we're going to go back to what Peyton does best and go to this no huddle offense and let him make the plays at the line. And that's where I think they succeeded. So I agree with you. I think that the mindset going into the season was to let Gary Kubiak install this run first offense and do it as Elway did. Mm-hmm. But I think that we're going to see in these upcoming weeks more of,
they're going to want to win games. Like, losing.
And
like,
I could see them trying to do both, you know, mm-hmm. trying to
start the game with the whole run thing. And if it doesn't work, then go to Peyton's deal.
Yeah.
I think that's how I agree with you. I think that's what they're going to do. And eventually the idea being that by November, December, when Peyton starts to get a little tired, that run game is in full force.
Exactly. Yeah.
We're going to go quickly here to Cincinnati, Oakland. This is an ugly one. Oakland, you know, we had high hopes for Oakland, but we thought they were going to be a different Raiders team. Their kind of lack of depth was really exposed by the Bengals. Well, the Bengals' depth of depth, really. Cincinnati really dominated them. Oakland scored a couple points in the fourth quarter, but this was
time.
A 30-0 game for
majority.
You know, yeah. And before the season, I was a little wary about Amari Cooper facing, you know, number one coverage, and he was still their leading receiver for the Raiders, but he did not do well against that really physical attack from Pac-Man Jones. He had the weird incident where Jones took his helmet and smashed against him.
Yeah.
Still don't know why that wasn't a suspension or anything.
Yeah, he was only fined for that. That's kind of strange.
But, yeah, he's going to have a tough time. Like, he's going to get a lot of the number one coverage. He's going to see those top guys, so we'll see if that Oakland offense can get going.
Yeah, you know what? And it doesn't help that Derek Carr wasn't able to see out the rest of the game. Matt McGloin was the one throwing to Amari Cooper for majority of the contest. And, yeah, it's going to be tough for him. It's going to be tough sledding for Amari Cooper, because you're right. I mean, they don't really have that dominant number two. I think that maybe look to maybe Rivera as the tight end, as somebody else they could look at. But Latavius Murray, he averaged 4 yards a carry. The running game didn't really do much. I mean, to be honest, it's the defense of Oakland that I was more disappointed with. Mm-hmm. Khalil Mack was somebody, along with everybody else, that I thought was going to be able to create some pressure against Andy Dalton. He looked incredible during preseason, but Andy Dalton wasn't sacked one time, and it didn't look as if he was pressured at all. And he was able to pretty much take apart this defense. I mean, he had a quarterback rating of over 115.9.
Yeah, we rip by Andy Dalton a lot, but like, when he has time to throw and he's got good receivers, Eifert was good for him too.
Exactly. Eifert looked great in his return. 2 touchdowns over 100 yards, so it's good to see him back on the field.
Okay, now, this one, it was another kind of surprise. I don't know if it was a surprise. Wasn't a surprise for me in terms of who won the game, but how they won the game. Tennessee beat up Tampa Bay 42-14. That was the most points scored by any team in the first week of the season. It was done by rookie quarterback Marcus Mariota,
right,
who had more touchdowns than incompletions.
Wow.
13-16 with 4 touchdowns. He wasn't fazed by the pressure. He was helped by the fact that the Bucs defense didn't tackle. And just, that run action game, really, he took advantage of them. He kind of held the linebackers on those play action fakes and tossed the ball right over their heads time after time. Winston made some mistakes, but, you know, I think it was really Mariota that was the story of this game.
I agree 100%. Ken Whisenhunt crafted a perfect game plan for him, just allowing him just to throw 16 passes. He completed 13 of them, like you said, for 4 touchdowns. I mean, he was incredible. I'd like to see if they expand his role as the season goes on.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's only fair for a rookie, only asked so much in each game, and I expect, you know, I don't expect in December for him to be throwing 16 passes a game.
And I think we're going to see the opposite for Jameis. I think maybe they might have put too much on his plate early on.
Yeah.
The offensive line, I mean, it wasn't terrible, but
it was pretty bad.
Still wasn't. I think not nearly as
I think
good.
We need to give some credit to the Titans defensive line and Jarrell Casey in particular.
Oh, for sure.
Brian Arakpo was pretty good too, but Jarrell Casey was like really dominant. I also kind of saw that Winston, when they got down pretty early, and something he needs to do is realize that they're gonna lose some games, because they got down early and he started to try and make these high risk plays that just don't work in the NFL.
He needs to take
that time to develop into an NFL quarterback and like use every snap. Whereas, you know, I felt for a lot of the second half he was, you know, he scored a couple plays, worked out, got a couple TDs to Austin Seffern Jenkins. But that's just not how you connect or how you develop as an NFL quarterback. And
kind of what he was used to doing at Florida State. I think that once Mike Evans comes back, I don't know if it's going to be this week or maybe next week.
Evans said he feels 100% this week. So
okay, so that's good to know, because, I mean, that's somebody who's definitely going to help Winston's cause in the upcoming weeks.
Absolutely. I think this will be, like I said before, this is in our last show, this is going to be one of the storylines of the year, and it started off to a pretty interesting opening. You know, Marcus, some people ready to crown Marcus Mariota as the next greatest quarterback of all time.
Yeah,
and Jameis Winston as, you know, Jamarcus Russell 2.0,
overreaction week one.
Yeah,
right?
And that's the best part, right? those overreactions. That's why we play the rest of the season, though, right?
Exactly.
So another one we got to mention, the Sunday nighter was a thriller.
Wow.
Came what down to literally like the last couple seconds, and it's a pretty usual Cowboys Giants opener.
Right.
Dallas beat Giants 27-26. Off a combination of bonehead play calling, play executing, and clock management Eli Manning, Tom Coughlin, and Ben McAdoo. I don't know.
Wow.
Just the whole group. And then Tony Romo, with no timeouts and under 2 minutes to go, drives down the field, finds his running backs and his tight ends. No Dez Bryant, makes the clutch plays, and wins the game.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to watch this with our producer, Rob Marsiglio. He's not here today. And we've established that he's a Cowboys fan. And it was funny because he really is a really diehard Cowboys fan. And I fell for him because, like, it was late in the game. He was not enjoying what was going on. But he was the happiest guy in that room when Tony Romo was able to drive it down and score that late touchdown to Witten. And yeah, I don't know what was going on. Apparently, Rashad Jennings is saying that he was told not to score. Eli was apparently had to come out and say that he was the one who told him that. Tom Coughlin comes out and says, "Why would I say that? That's not something I would have said." What a mess.
It was just like they didn't know. First of all, they didn't know how many timeouts the Cowboys had. That was clearly a mistake. Which is weird.
Right.
They've got it on the TVs and the monitors all over the whole stadium there. Coughlin came out and said I got to take that as my responsibility. But
he's right.
He doesn't call the plays.
But I mean, he's the head coach. He has to oversee
And that's the thing. Like, he's just kind of taking the responsibility. And you can put this wherever you'd like. Put this on Ben McAdoo for calling the pass. Put this on Rashad Jennings for not scoring. Put this on Eli Manning for telling Rashad Jennings not scoring, or Eli Manning for not taking a sack. Like, that's what he should have done there.
At that point,
In the game, there's nobody open. You don't want to throw a pick. You take a sack.
Exactly. You know what, though? Dallas deserved to win this game. I mean, they pretty much were giving the game to the New York Giants anyway. Two picks from Tony Romo that really weren't his fault. One was off of Witten's hand, and then I think the other was to their rookie wide receiver that was just kind of knocked out of his hands.
Yeah.
So those are two turnovers that led to immediate points.
No Dez Bryant is huge, too. And he didn't know that was – like, Dez went out pretty early, came back, and then he went out again.
And it's a broken foot that they're saying that's going to sideline him to up to 6 weeks.
Yeah, maybe even eight.
Yeah.
So,
exactly. Yeah, that's not something you want to mess around with.
No, absolutely not. And I think it's very worth noting that Tony was 22 of 23 when targeting running backs and tight ends in this game.
Yeah.
And he found, you know, in that last drive, like I mentioned, he found Lance Dunbar for 25 yards. He found Jason Witten for about 30 yards on two catches. he was, you know, he did, you know, he was, we don't want to, we don't always give him credit for being as clutch as he is, but he does have the most fourth quarter comebacks since he's been in the league.
Exactly.
And this is what he kind of does. Now, it'll be very interesting to see how he is going forward without Dez Bryant, with other teams game planning for no Dez Bryant. They're taking on your Philadelphia Eagles this week. It'll be, I'm sure that's something that the Eagles and Chip Kelly are smiling about.
I hope so.
And now we go to your guys, your boys.
I spoke of them.
The Monday nighter, the first game of the Monday nighter.
Right.
The Falcons beat the Eagles 26-24.
Mitch, let me explain what happened. Julio Jones beat the Eagles on Monday night. I mean, he was an absolute monster. Yeah. He was incredible. I mean, I don't think we sold how good he's going to be this upcoming year.
Yeah. And if you look at his numbers, he should have had another 60 yards.
Oh, easily.
That was called back off offensive pass interference from his receivers blocking down.
And we see
him.
Green Bay do that all the time, and yeah. Sometimes they get away with it. So it's just going to really depend on who's reffing that game, I think.
And it's got to, and for those little plays, you know, it's got to be timing from the wide receivers. Sometimes they're just a little early, and it's just you know, you just got to know where the ball is. I think, you know, big thing for me though is the Falcons defense has really changed under Dan
Vic
Quinn.
Beasley was at points abusing Jason Peters. Jason Peters is one of the best players on the Philadelphia Eagles. He's been a mainstay
left tackles in the league.
And Vic Beasley, as a rookie, looked incredible. Their cornerbacks didn't look too bad either. I mean,
no,
led by Trufant.
Yeah, Trufant. They, you know, they were mentioning in the broadcast too how Trufant has embraced this idea of he's going to be the Richard Sherman.
Yep.
And that we kind of talked about that. He would be the Richard Sherman. Vic Beasley as the kind of the Cliff Averill, Bruce Irvin edge rusher.
Right.
They're starting to put those pieces together. But I think we found that they have maybe more of those pieces than we thought they did.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, Dan Quinn has done a great job over the offseason reconstructing
very quickly.
This defense.
I did not expect them to be this good that fast.
No, not at all.
And I think it's worth noting, too, that the Falcons offensive line played quite well. Where last year they were really bad. At points they had to play a
tight end.
At offensive tackle.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that Eagles rush game, we mentioned it before. We thought that was one of the better ones in the league. And,
I mean, they started to get some pressure late.
Yeah.
So I'm not too disappointed with them. The linebackers for the Eagles looked pretty good. Kiko Alonso had that one-handed interception
crazy,
in the end zone.
Yeah, looking at that play, if you watch that play, up until he makes that catch, I was convinced that it was a touchdown to
Roddy White.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You got 100%. So, yeah, I'm excited to see how that linebacker core goes. The Eagles' offense really didn't get going until third.
Yeah, we kind of learned a lesson from preseason. Don't trust the preseason.
But, you know what, though? I'm still optimistic. I think that, you know, like I said,
Chip Kelly's going to make adjustments.
It took a while. I think it was kind of nerves, especially with Sam Bradford, because throws that he was making in preseason, he was just inaccurate with, and he is normally an accurate passer. So I think it's just a matter of just getting this first game out of the way so that he'll be able to produce going forward. And, yeah, just looking forward. DeMarco Murray only had 9 rushes, but he did have 2 touchdowns. Darren Sproles is incredible. They have to find ways to get him on the field as much as possible.
Yeah, I think that that backfield, that's what they need. They only had, I think, like 8 rushing yards or something like that in the first half. It was something really bad.
Yeah.
But they need to get that rush game going earlier on.
I agree.
So we go to the last game. I think this is a game that neither one of us really want to talk about for different reasons.
I definitely don't.
I know I don't. I don't want to talk about it because, I know, in our fantasy league, I was leading 25 points going into this game, and Carlos Hyde goes off for the best running, the best week of anybody, 180 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Right.
And I lose that game.
Well, my reasoning for not wanting to talk about this is because this was my lock of the week.
Yeah.
Not only for our podcast, but also for a survivor pool I'm in.
Ooh.
So I'm already out week one. I mean, Mitch, this is what happened here.
I think what really happened here was that we just – so many bad things happened for the Niners in the offseason that we didn't even think of the possibility they might actually still be good. That Carlos Hyde – you know, I thought Carlos Hyde would be a good player this season.
So did I.
More in terms of he'll just get chances, and they got – they still have a good offensive line.
Sure.
With guys like Joe Staley. But I think Jeep Christ, the offensive coordinator for the Niners, did a really good job – of he was Colin Kaepernick's quarterback coach beforehand, and he did a good job of putting in a system that didn't ask too much of Kaepernick and really played to the strength of his offense, which is apparently Carlos Hyde. And I think as the season goes on, it'll be play action passes to Torrey Smith as well.
Sure.
And Colin Kaepernick can air it out just as good as anybody.
This Minnesota team, though, they were really disappointing. I mean, the offensive line was not – I mean, Teddy Bridgewater wasn't great, but this offensive line didn't do anything for him. Khalil looked terrible. I thought he was going to improve after last year.
I thought the Niners were able to basically dictate the Vikings' play calling by sliding a safety up into the box and the Vikings audible to a pass almost every time. And sometimes you just got to give, Adrian Peterson is used to playing against 8-man boxes like his whole career. And they were passed, given to him out of the shotgun.
It just looked weird. And not to mention, he only had 10 carries in the game.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it.
One of them, he dragged like four guys for seven yards. So
he's not hurting.
No.
He's fine. I don't understand what the play calling by North Turner was. As usual, Cordarrelle Patterson was a non-factor. Mike Wallace, 63 yards for him. I thought maybe Charles Johnson would have been the leading receiver, but, he only had the one catch. I think it was, two catches for 27 yards. This is a week one. We mentioned the fact that people love to overreact after just the first week of games. So I'm going to assume that this is just a blip in the Minnesota Vikings radar because we're not the only ones who think that they were going to be a surprise, not even a surprise, but just a better up-and-coming team. So
yeah, and I think that, Mike Zimmer is going to make defensive adjustments. That's one thing that you kind of think is after week one, this is the overreaction, and there's almost an overreaction by coaches too who see maybe glaring holes in their team and they want to fix them.
Right.
So they're going to make those – if there's glaring holes, that they're going to make those adjustments, I think, quickly. And I think that Zimmer is one of those guys who defensively anyways, he's going to make those adjustments to the run game. I can see Eric Kendricks didn't play, didn't start for the Vikings. I think he gets in there now.
Okay.
Because he's got that range and he's a very good tackler. I think they need the linebackers to be more playmakers.
Okay.
And they have a good trio there with Barr and Greenway, and I think Kendricks is going to fit in really well.
I agree, buddy, 100%.
All right, so that was all we had for week one. Week two is underway already, so we're gonna here take a little break and get that show out to you soon. So remember, again, you can follow us on Twitter at Between Trenches, like us on Facebook, send us your questions, fantasy football picks, whatever it may be. Also, you can go to our new website, www.betweenthetrenches.com, and you can check out all our stuff there. We'll be posting our podcasts, have a little blog there, some fantasy stuff, and you can follow all our picks, everything you need to know about football right there.
Absolutely. So this has been a great episode 13. Week one is over. Week two, like you said, Mitch, is underway. So can't wait to get started talking about that. Take care, guys.
Let me ask you a question. Who could possibly have it better than us?
No!